Chapter 16. I'll do anything, Daniel. You know that. Anything. Joel's voice shook with earnestness. His eyes, in the flickering lamplight, were fixed on his friend's face. The three sat crouched in the narrow passageway of Joel's home. Earlier that day, Daniel had received a summons by messenger from Rosh. He had climbed to the cave, and then, after a brief conference, had gone straight to the city. Shortly before dark, Joel and Thacia had crept through the passageway to join him. Daniel brought with him the long-awaited orders from Rosh to Joel. At first, waiting in the dark passageway, Daniel had battled with his own jealousy that Joel should have the first chance to act, while he himself, the one who had brought Joel in as a recruit, should stand aside and wait. But now he was beginning to see the thing reasonably. This was only the beginning. "Rosh needs some information," he told his eager friend. "You're the only one who can get it, Joel. You know your way around the city, and everyone is used to seeing you. None of the rest of us could get near. What does Rosh want?" "I'll get it, whatever it is," Daniel told him, his voice echoing the contempt with which Galileans always spoke of the Tetrarch. The half-Jew, Herod Antipas, who had been appointed to rule over them, and of the extravagant city he had built on the sea. "Herod is entertaining a special legation from Rome. While they're at Tiberias, they plan to come up to Capernaum for a day or so to inspect the garrison here. For some people, the rich ones who toady to Rome, that will be a great occasion. Mattathias, the banker, is giving a banquet for the whole legation, and some of the richest men in Capernaum will be there." "Mattathias would do anything to gain favor with the Tetrarch," said Joel with scorn. "How does Rosh know about the banquet?" "Don't ask me how. He has his ways. What he wants to know is what others will be there, the names of all of them, and the day and the time when the banquet will take place." Joel nodded. "I can see why. It would give us a good idea which men would be against us. Any Jew who would eat at the Tetrarch's table." "That's it. We need to know our enemies as well as our friends." "Is that all I have to do? Just find out those things?" Joel looked disappointed. "You may not find it so easy. Rosh didn't have any idea how you'd go about it. He left all that to you." "How will I get the word to Rosh?" asked Joel, looking flattered. "I'll take care of that. Bring what you find to me, or send it by one of the band, someone we can trust. I'll see that it gets to Rosh." Joel's eyes began to sparkle at the thought of intrigue. "Let's see," he began. "It doesn't really help that people know me here. That kind would hold their tongues because of Father. I don't think I'd find out a thing. Besides, Mattathias and Father don't speak to each other. No, the servants are the ones to talk to. If I could get into the servants, if I could sell something..." "Fish," Thacia broke in. "You could get all the fish you want from Simon and Andrew." At moments like this, caught up in the same excitement, the brother and sister were unmistakably twins. "Good idea," Joel flashed. "I'll get a basket full of extra fine ones and peddle them for a good price. I can say I'll take orders for any special occasion. You know how the kitchen slaves talk about a party. I'm sure it would work." Struggling with envy again, Daniel sat silent. Joel was too excited to wonder why he, the youngest of the group, should have been given this assignment. The truth was, Daniel knew, Rosh had no one else to send. The band in the mountains boasted more muscle than wit. How far would he himself get with his smith's shoulders and his country manners? Joel had to be the one. Then, watching Joel's rapt, flushed face, Daniel felt not envy, but unexpected misgiving. If anything went wrong... He glanced at Thacia. Her eyes met his, and in them he saw his own doubt suddenly mirrored. "Joel," he said, "you don't have to do this. Rosh has no right to order you." "Why hasn't he? If he asked you, it's different with me." "Why is it different?" "I'm a nobody. You have your future to think of, and your father and mother, and Thacia." "No," said Thacia quickly, "not me. I took the oath with you, remember? Only Daniel. This is a dangerous thing." "Stop fussing, both of you," said Joel, with new importance. "Let me think. I can get the fish early, before it's light. But suppose Father finds out I'm not in school. Perhaps I could ask him for a holiday." Thacia leaned forward. "Joel, I have an idea. What if you and Daniel were seen going out of the city tomorrow morning? Suppose you passed the guards and even spoke to them. So if we needed, people could swear they had seen you. Wouldn't that leave you free to do anything you like?" Joel stared at his sister, and then his face came alive like hers. "Face! Why didn't I think of it? Would you do it, honestly?" "You know I would." As always, Daniel was baffled by the swiftness with which these two caught up in each other's thoughts and left him stumbling behind. "I don't see," he said, annoyed. Joel laughed. "We've done it plenty of times in the past, just for the fun of it. When we were little and her hair was short, we used to change clothes, and sometimes we fooled the neighbors, the nearsighted ones, at least. Of course, she's shorter now, but unless we stand side by side, who would notice?" Daniel caught on. "You mean..." "Of course," Joel interrupted him, as he did his sister, without realizing it. "Thace wears my clothes, and with her hair back under the turban, who's to know she's not a boy? Then you two go about together. I'll arrange for a day off. You could go, oh, somewhere out of the city would be best, where we're not too well known. We'll go visit Leah. I've been wanting to for days." In the face of their enthusiasm, Daniel's scruples melted. Before he crept out of the passageway and set out for the village, the three had agreed to meet next morning by the boats of Simon and Andrew. Before dawn, Daniel joined the farmers on the road to the city. At the harbor, the usual crowd waited hopefully by the fishing boats. As he drew nearer, two boys moved from the rest and came to meet him. One was a sturdy barefoot fisherman in a rough cotton tunic, his throat and arms bare. The other made Daniel gasp. Beneath a close-bound turban was half-hidden a second Joel, younger, smooth-faced, more finely drawn, but with the same lustrous eyes. Thacia tipped back her head for Daniel's scrutiny in a gesture that reminded him of Leah. "It's not quite so perfect as it used to be," she admitted cheerfully. "We'd better keep away from the marketplace. Once out of town, I'll be safe." Both brother and sister were relishing their conspiracy. Their high spirits made his own doubt seem niggardly. Joel had already arranged for a consignment of fish and had them hidden under a half-upturned boat, packed under fresh green leaves in a woven basket. Presently, he set off with a swaggering step and a wide grin. Then Thacia took control with a brisk efficiency that surprised Daniel. "We'll go this way," she directed. "We won't be so likely to meet anyone." "Aren't you going to wait?" Daniel asked, surprised. "Jesus will be here soon." A slight cloud darkened her face. "No," she said, "not this morning. I'd rather get out of the city." "I thought you meant to be seen." "Yes, well, I don't want to meet anyone face to face." She hurried him along unfamiliar streets towards the gates of the city. For a time they walked in silence, and then Thacia spoke. "It isn't really that I'm afraid to be seen," she said honestly. "I didn't want to wait for Jesus. I didn't want to see his face when he saw me like this." Daniel was surprised. Then he remembered dimly the ancient law that forbade a man and woman to wear each other's garments. "Are you worried about the law?" he asked. "I don't think Jesus..." "Oh, the law," she replied. "Joel and I have broken so many laws lately that one more wouldn't matter." She paused, embarrassed, because he must know that any laws she and Joel had broken had to do with their visits to Daniel's house. Then she hurried on. "It's just that I don't want to face Jesus with a lie. I couldn't bear the way his eyes would look at me." "If he understood the reason, he wouldn't blame you." "Yes, I think he would," she said thoughtfully. "I think that for Jesus, a lie is impossible, no matter what the reason." "In a war, a lie is a weapon," said Daniel. "We have to use what weapons we have. Even Jesus must see that." "I don't think he would see it at all," said Thacia. She walked on a little way. Then she spoke again. "Daniel, what makes you and Joel so sure that Jesus means to make war?"
"He says that the kingdom is at hand. What else can he mean?"
"Did you ever think he might mean that the kingdom will come some other way, without any fighting?"
"You mean just wait? Forever? Like your father says?"
Thacia's forehead wrinkled in an effort to put her thoughts into words. "Not exactly. You see, Jesus has made me see that we don't need to wait for God to care for us. He does that now, every one of us. Jesus says that God sees into our hearts and loves us. If everyone understood that, every man and woman,
would that rid us of the Romans?"
"Suppose the Romans too could understand." He stopped in the road and stared at her.
"Romans? You think God loves the Romans?"
Thacia sighed. "That's impossible, I suppose. Then why does he say that we must love our enemies?"
"He's talking to men. A girl can't understand such things." He said it rudely, and too loudly, because Thacia's words had come close to his own secret doubts. So loudly that two passers-by turned to stare at them, and Thacia lowered her head and hurried her steps. When she spoke again, she changed the subject.
"This thing that Joel is doing, is it dangerous? I don't quite understand it.
Why does Rosh want those names?
I don't think it's dangerous, he told her, not quite truthfully. Joel thinks fast. Don't worry about him.
The last part of her question he did not answer. He did not want to admit that he could not see why Rosh wanted the names. Thaisha was only too willing to accept his assurance, and at once she was confident again. They left the stone houses behind them, passed through the wall of Capernaum, taking special care to greet the sentries, and took the broad road that led north into the hills. All at once, Daniel's muscles tensed. He had seen, just ahead, two figures in the familiar metal helmets. Two soldiers rested beside the road, their heavy packs in the dust. One of them sat on the stone wall, his spear leaning beside him. The other was adjusting the strap of his sandal, but he glanced up now, and Daniel saw that it was too late even to consider turning back. "They're sure to speak to us," he cautioned Thaisha under his breath. "What if they do?" she asked. "That's what I came for, to be seen."
"All the same, you let me do the talking."
The two soldiers watched their approach with interest.
"The gods have done us a favor after all," one of them said. "Didn't I predict it?"
"It's more than you deserve," said the other. "But who's to question the gods? Here, boy." With a snap of his finger, he indicated the two packs. A quick upward jerk of his elbow made his orders clear. Black anger rose in Daniel. He knew well enough the law that allowed a Roman to command that a Jew carry his burden for 1 mile. But the man didn't live who could make him shoulder a Roman pack. He looked squarely at the soldier. Then he spat deliberately. The blow across his mouth came instantly and staggeringly, but he did not lower his head. The second soldier got to his feet easily, carelessly, his eyes watchful. There was a stifled gasp. Then Thaisha very quietly stepped forward and lifted one of the packs. It was heavier than she expected, and she paused a second, then made another try and hoisted it awkwardly to her shoulders. The soldiers waited. Daniel stood in helpless fury. Then, for the first time in his life, he bent his neck to the Roman yoke and picked up the second pack. He wanted to weep for shame. The blood pounded in his temples. He did not know which he hated more, the two soldiers or the girl who walked beside him, who had tricked him into this humiliation. He looked at her from the corner of his eye. She was walking at a fair pace, only a slight stagger betraying the effort. Let her stumble. Let her fall and see if he cared. In a moment, he looked sideways again. He saw the drops of moisture that clung to her forehead and trickled down her chin. Suddenly, shame for her flooded over his own. "Thaisha." "Put it down," he muttered, shifting closer to her. "I'll take mine on and come back for it." "Nothing of the kind," she panted. "Keep quiet. Don't talk." The two soldiers ambled behind them, chatting good-naturedly to each other as though the two pack-bearers were mules. Finally, they reached the milestone. By rights, the soldiers could have made them go on, since they had taken the burdens well within the limits of the stone. But Thaisha's pace had become irksome, and it was obvious that, though willing, she could do no better. So the owner of her pack shouldered it himself, and less willingly the other let Daniel off also, with a parting blow on the ear for his sullenness. They strode ahead along the road, and Thaisha sank down on the grass, rubbing her shoulder.
"Are you all right?" Daniel asked finally, not looking at her.
"No thanks to you. What possessed you, Daniel?" Daniel scowled down at the road. "The very sight of them makes me lose my head. Filthy foreigners, if you hadn't been with me, you'd have lost your silly head for good. How would you have served your country?"
"All right," he burst out. "I made a fool of myself. Do you want to go back now?"
"Certainly not," she sprang to her feet. "I want to see Leah." They went on, Daniel keeping his eyes on the road ahead, but presently stealing a furtive look at the girl beside him. Daniel discovered that she was looking directly at him.
"I might as well be honest, Daniel," she said unexpectedly. "Back there I was proud of you. Scared to death, but proud too. If I were a boy, I hope I'd have the courage."
The frank words took Daniel by surprise. He could feel the pleasure of them spreading warm as wine along his veins. He had never had much praise in his life. He didn't know what to make of it. As they climbed the first rise from the plain, a breeze stirred their hot faces. On every side the land stretched, brown and parched under the summer sun. Here and there a solitary thresher still moved in a field, tossing the grain in great forkfuls into the air, letting the breeze catch the chaff while the heavy grain fell back to the ground. Presently, they reached the village. Outside his own door, Daniel knocked and called out, and presently the bolt inside was quietly drawn back. As Daniel pushed open the door, Thaisha stood back. "I have brought a friend of yours with me," Daniel announced. Leah, from the corner where she had retreated at the first glimpse of an unfamiliar figure, stared out into the road. Then her face lighted. "Thaisha," she cried, "why are you dressed in Joel's clothes?" Thaisha came into the room laughing and pushing back the hot turban with relief. "It's lucky everyone doesn't have your sharp eyes," she said. "You won't give me away, will you? It's a sort of game we're playing." Leah came forward slowly. "Daniel never plays games," she said soberly. "What a pity," said Thaisha lightly. "Joel and I pretend all sorts of things, but I'll tell you a secret. Your brother does know how to smile. Quite nicely, actually. He doesn't always hide behind that fearful scowl." Unexpectedly, Leah giggled, and then both girls were laughing. Scowling more fiercely than ever, Daniel stamped into his shop, but he left the door open behind him. In Thaisha's light-hearted presence, Leah was a different girl altogether. As he worked, Daniel caught, between the hissing of the forge and the blows of his hammer, the sound of their voices, and over again, Leah's soft laughter. When he crossed the room for a tool, he could see them, the two heads, dark and fair, bent over a bit of sewing. He found a good many excuses for walking across the shop that morning. At noon, they ate their meal together. Leah spread out with pride the hard bread and the olives and the inferior dates, not knowing how meager the fare really was. With every bite, Daniel remembered the fine white cloth, the damask couches, the wine in alabaster cups. But Thaisha seemed to have forgotten. What was there about her? He wondered, a sort of naturalness that made her seem without the slightest effort to belong, no matter where she happened to be. On the mountain, in the luxury of her own home, among the fishing boats, her gaiety touched with a special grace everything around her. Leah had begun to clear the dishes when some sound distracted her. Daniel, leaning back on his elbows only half awake in the heavy heat, caught first the look on his sister's face. She was staring through the open door of the shop, and a deep flush was rising slowly from her throat to her pale temples. Daniel sat up. Then he caught the flash of sunlight on a helmet. The pleasure of the moment exploded like a bubble. In an instant, he was on his feet, had flung himself into the shop, and slammed the door shut behind him. He had thought he had seen the last of the blonde Roman. What had brought the man back? Curse him, too, for choosing to bring this work in the heat of the day. In a black humor, he blew up the fire. When the shadows began to lengthen in the little room, they all knew with regret that the visit must end. Before they set out for the city, Daniel took Thaisha into his shop. "You have brought so many gifts to Leah," he said, trying to choose his words carefully. "Would you let me give one to you?" He reached into a deep niche in the wall and drew out a small object wrapped in a fragment of Leah's blue cloth. Awkwardly, he laid in Thaisha's hand the little brooch. "I made it with a bit of scrap," he said. Thaisha stood looking down at it. "A bronze bow," she whispered. "Do you remember? It was you who thought of it, that night, that the bronze bow might mean some impossible thing, the thing we could not do alone. I never forgot it. I don't know how to say it, but it came to stand for everything we are working for our oath, for the kingdom." He had never seen Thaisha before, when she could not speak. He would remember as long as he lived the look that sprang into her eyes and was quickly hidden as she bent her head. Then her words came hurrying out. "To think that you made it," she exclaimed, her voice shaky. "Why, you ought to be a silversmith, Daniel. You shouldn't be working with these great chunks of iron." "I'd like to try," he confessed, "perhaps someday when we are at peace." It was the first time he had ever voiced his ambition, even to himself. They set out together along the road, Thaisha with the turban snugly about her head once more. "Every time I come, Leah has changed," she told him. "It's like watching a flower opening very slowly. From week to week, I can hardly wait to see how it has opened since I saw her last." "It is due to you," Daniel told her humbly. "She has never had a friend before. After you leave, I see her trying to do things the way you do them." Thaisha smiled at him. "Little things," she said. "Her hair and the way she folds her veil. That's not what I mean." "She does almost all the work in the house now," he went on, "but there are days when she goes back." He was grateful for a chance to speak of this to someone. days when she doesn't pay any attention, it's hard for me to have patience enough." Thaisa smiled again. "No, no one would ever take you for a patient man," she said. "But do you think Joel and I do not know what you have done for Leah?" Daniel's gratitude went out to her. He would like to think he had done something to make up for those years. "She is so lovely," Thaisa went on thoughtfully. "I can't believe there are really any demons in her. Have you ever asked a physician?" "The one in the village said there was no cure for her. Once there was a man traveling through the country who had magic power to heal, and my grandmother paid him to look at Leah. He could not do anything either. He said that the demons that make a person afraid are the hardest to cast out. He said something queer. Leah was only a child, but he said that she did not want to be made well." Thaisa was silent for a moment. "I have heard Jesus say something like that, when people ask him to cure them. Once there was a lame man on a litter. Jesus bent over him and looked right into his face and asked him, 'Do you want to be whole?' It seemed such a queer question. Why would anyone want to say crippled?" Daniel hesitated. This was something he had thought about, walking alone on the dark, silent road from Bethsaida. He was not sure of his own thoughts. "Haven't you ever wondered," he attempted, "what good it is for them to be healed, those people that Jesus cures? They're happy at first, but what happens to them after that? What does a blind man think when he has wanted for years to see, and then looks at his wife in rags and his children covered with sores? That lame man you saw, is he grateful now? Is it worth it to get on his feet and spend the rest of his life dragging burdens like a mule?" "I never thought of it that way," said Thaisa, her eyes clouding. "Is that why, do you think, that so many of them aren't cured?" The thought was troubling to them both. They walked on in uncertain silence, then Thaisa's naturally happy spirits reasserted themselves. "Have you thought, Daniel, of taking Leah to Jesus?" "Yes, I've thought of that, but I don't see how I could get her to Capernaum without frightening her to death. She asked once if Jesus would ever come to our village, but I don't suppose she would really have the courage." "When he comes, if she will not go to him, then you must ask him to come to your house with you. He often goes with people, you know." "To the centurion's house, or to some rich man's." "Do you really think that would make the slightest difference to Jesus?" "No, no, I guess it wouldn't, but somehow I wonder. It's the same as the lame man. It's not much of a world, is it? Is it worth trying to bring Leah back into it?" Thaisa stood still in the road. "Yes," she cried, and Daniel was astounded to see that tears had sprung into her eyes. "Oh, Daniel, yes! If only I could make you see, somehow, that it is!" "All this," she exclaimed, the sweep of her arm, including the deepening blue of the sky, the shining lake in the distance, the snow-covered mountain far to the north. "So much! You must look at it all, Daniel, not just at the unhappy things." Suddenly she reached out and touched his hand. "Look," she whispered. He lifted his head and followed her gaze. Overhead, barely discernible against the blue of the sky, a long gray shadow hung suspended. Cranes, hundreds of them, were passing in a great phalanx. They wheeled and caught the sun, flashing light from banks of white feathers, with a shimmering like the snow on the mountain. Motionless, the two watched till the line slowly melted into the distant air. Thaisa let out her breath. "How beautiful!" she sighed. "It is beautiful just to be alive in Galilee!" Daniel looked down at her. Her head was still thrown back, her lips parted. He could see the pulse beating under the smooth ivory skin, and somehow the line of her throat was one with the long, slow arc of the birds in flight. She was aware all at once of his look, and then that their hands were joined. Red surged up into the smooth cheeks, and she drew her hand away. For a moment, neither of them moved, and then they both began to hurry, almost to run. At the junction of the road, they passed two more Roman sentries, but this time the men did not speak or even take notice of two dusty boys. For once, Daniel felt almost grateful to a Roman. Tonight, he could not have borne to watch Thaisa shoulder a pack.